dancing shoes on no matter what. This is the day the Lord has made. We shall rejoice and be glad in it. I'm Jenny Russell. Welcome to Her Health and Happiness right here on UK Health Radio, your only real feel-good radio station. Now available on Alexa. Just say, Alexa, play UK Health Radio. How you doing? Hope, like me, you to remember that you are blessed and highly favored, a magnet for miracles, the solution to someone's problem, and the answer to somebody's prayer. And today, I hope the interviews that I've done, interviews, plural, will be the answer to many people's prayers. Got a packed show. We've got Dr. Guy Meadows from Sleep School, and we're talking about the impact a lack of sleep has on productivity, health, and mood. From the 20th to the 26th of February, it is Cancer Prevention Action Week, and I spoke with the wonderful Dr. Helen Croker, head of research, and Matthew Lambert, both from World Cancer Research Fund, and we're talking about removing the processed meat from our sandwiches as we focus on the impact it has on bowel cancer. And then I spoke with Mark Casely, corporate responsibility at the post office, and Leslie Francis, who's a postmaster. I called her a postmaster-ess. I do apologise, Leslie, but it called a postmaster. And we're talking about lonely Britons. Now, before we go into those three things, I just want to make a comment about the recent strikes and what's been happening. And I want to say, before I start, that I understand, for me, I've said it so many times, the things that are most valuable are the things we tend to value the less. This is why this show is called Her Health and Happiness. I potentially, or particularly, focus on female intimate health and the whole person. Now, people say, oh, my health is priceless. But actually, when you tell them they have to pay for something, they start to say it's too expensive. The issue is, if we lose our health, we potentially lose our life. So what is more expensive than not being able to live? Especially if you haven't lived out your purpose and you have things to do. Now, with the nurses and the nurses' strike and the ambulance strike, I understand that. I understand, I've always said, for me, we pay people that wear suits and ties way too much money to make lots more money and tend to keep it for themselves and not share it fairly. And those who we look to improve our life or save our life, we give them nothing. We came out and clapped for the nurses, but we won't give them a pay rise. I will say it over and over again. The government, the MPs, gave themselves an 11% pay rise on their 80 plus thousand salary, plus all their grants and things they get on the top. And then said, we won't take anything in the second year of lockdown, but told nurses and that, we will clap for you, but we won't give you anything. When they were working ridiculous hours and putting themselves in the front line of this pandemic. But... as one nurse did say to me in North Middlesex Hospital, my mum was in hospital 2 weeks ago. If you do this job for the money, you are in the wrong profession. You have to do this job for love. And the reason why I'm making this completely, this comment, is because North Middlesex Hospital in Edmonton is a teaching hospital. And all I want to say to the government, this is really a plea to the government. What are you teaching those nurses and doctors in North Middlesex Hospital? Because my mum's experience in the same ward, Emerald Ward, I'm calling you out. You have a complete lack and disregard for your patients in that ward. It's ridiculous. I had to call the ambulance for my mum three Saturdays ago. And again, we were blue lighted to hospital. The lady put the catheter in the ER. We're worried about her sodium levels. She's got dementia. She has dementia, Alzheimer's. She has diabetes. We're worried about that. The doctors come later on and tell me they're worried about the sodium levels and the lactate. I put two and two together and make four at being a nutrition and lifestyle coach. I said, are you not worried about the fact that there's not much urine in the bag? But what had actually happened is if someone had moved the covers, would have realised the catheter was not fitted properly and mum was laying in her urine. Now we move her into the ward. They're taking pictures to make sure there's no sores because the sore they created last year and the sore had healed. But by the Monday, they suddenly realised the sore has opened up, trying to say it came from home, but we had those pictures. Now I have to give you the whole story. I'm really sorry. I hope this makes sense. But this is what happened. The carers came in. We were there all the time to look after mum because the carers came on two different days and had to change all the bed sheets. My mum's in a room furthest away from the nurse's station and she's one of the most vulnerable. But when she was sent home, the doctor came to speak to me. The metformin had been removed. So I looked up why metformin had been removed and I had does play a role in the raised sodium and lactate production in my mum, which would have a devastating impact on the kidneys, which was an issue. But when I asked the doctor that was left to discharge my mum on the Friday, he didn't even realise she took metformin. Does anybody read notes? That's what is really worrying. This happened last year. A doctor told me, his exact words were, but I will not say the swear word, it has been a complete F up when it comes to your mum's care. That was his exact words. And I got the same thing. She came home with the catheter. It wasn't, I think, in moving, it didn't empty. A district nurse came and removed it. Another one put one in on Saturday. My mum ended up pulling it out herself. So I think she's damaged herself. But I went back to get the discharge form, which never mentioned the catheter, which never mentioned the sore. So it's not complete. They never had it ready when she was going, and that was my mistake, where they convinced me they would have it ready and I could come and collect it. I said to the nurse, this could cause problems for my mum and it could have cost her life. Let me tell you the response. It could have cost her life, yes, but you can complain if you want to. Yes, all in one. Tapawa, T-A-P-I-W-A, that was her name. Now, I know they're under stress. She said, and I recorded them secretly, it's so much more than what we can do. It's too much work for one person. So you say that you're going to send the information to the district nurse. But when I called the district nurse, they have got no information. I had to go back to the hospital on the Saturday, stand over the desk and wait for her to do it. I've done it, but I just haven't had the time to email it and post it. I'm too busy. So I said, OK, I'll just wait for you to do it then. Because you've caused us a problem. Because you haven't completed what you need to do. The district nurses team don't know nothing about it. It's because my mum's had palliative care why they came out and showed compassion. I love that you do and you want to look after people. But you cannot tell patients' children, yeah, we could have killed your parent, but if you want to complain, you can do. I want to be on your side. I want to be on your side. I just understand that you're understaffed, you're overworked. So let us come in and let us be there and let us help you then. Rather than saying, get out, it's visiting time, it's over. Let us help you because there's no need for anyone to lose their parents under those circumstances when clearly you can be that flippant in your response. It doesn't help anybody and it doesn't help you because you don't know which parent you're talking to or which child you're talking to and what platform they sit on. That's all I have to say on the subject. Apart from that, at the beginning I said, This is the day the Lord has made. We shall rejoice and be glad in it. Mum is home. The sore is healed. She is hydrated till she can't be hydrated no more. She has good movement from her bladder and her bowel. Her eyes are alert. She's interacting with us again. She is back. Love, love conquers everything. Everything. Let's get into the show.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Today, I am blessed to be speaking with Mark Casley, Head of Corporate Responsibility at the Post Office, and Leslie Francis, Postmistress. I'm going to say. And we're talking today about Lonely Britain, as one in two Brits admit to feeling lonely in the last 6 months. So Mark and Leslie, welcome to Her Health and Happiness.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, Jenny.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Do you know, I think this is such a great topic because especially during lockdown, a lot of people were isolated and the loneliness figures must have gone through the roof. But since the come out of lockdown, for a lot of people, those figures haven't really changed. Let me start with you first, Leslie. Have you found that?
I think it's the numbers are still there. I just think the dynamics have changed slightly. People are still reluctant to come out, mix and or socialise. And then I think we've got a situation of isolation formed from the habits of staying in a lot before.
Sorry, so for all my listeners listening, I'm right over Airpath in Birmingham, so I just missed that last bit. Could you just repeat that for me, please, Leslie? I'm so sorry.
No, not at all. I think the numbers are still there. I just think the dynamics are slightly different. We've got a lot of elderly people and vulnerable people that were isolating before that are still reluctant to go out into masses or large numbers or groups. And then you've got the people that have become used to being isolated at home that are maybe reluctant to step out too.
Yeah. Do you feel, Leslie, that this is because, there was a lot of fear that was put into people, rightly or wrongly so, during the last 2 years. But that fear hasn't really gone away. We're getting waves of things coming back, going away. So then I think people are so worried about their own health and safety that they're trying to protect their physical health, but it's almost at the expense of their mental, emotional health. Does that make sense?
I would agree, yes.
Yeah. And so, Mark, what have you found? Because obviously there's a different perspective, I think, obviously female to male.
Yeah, so I'll talk through the survey that we've done in the last few weeks. We found that 2/3 of people say loneliness is a bigger issue now than it was 3 years ago. And I don't think that is a coincidence that is pre-pandemic. As he said, a lot of people, we changed our habits during the pandemic and we got used to doing way more things online and haven't fully come back out of our shell from those habits of doing things at home. We were really surprised to find that, for example, the 18 to 24 age group was the most likely to find themselves feeling lonely. 70% of the people we asked in that age group said they had felt lonely in the last 6 months. That compares to just 1/3 of people over 65. So it really does affect people right across the generations and right across the country as well.
Yeah, and I think, like I said, for me, I've driven down to Birmingham from London this morning to do what I enrolled on a year ago.
But there are opportunities to do that course online because it's the last one. Especially I wanted to come down. But it was very easy sometimes. I'm looking after my mum, who's not very well as well, so I had to organise care for her. So it can be very easy to, I don't need to drive 100 miles to do this or 200 miles round trip because I can do it online. But when you do it online, there's so many things you miss. Church online, there's so many bits that are missed. And before you realise it, you're pulling yourself away from so many circles and so many opportunities. And then when you get further down the road, you're trying to work out what's going on with you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So how can people, it's really weird because how do we get people? So I'm going to ask you first to answer, Leslie, and then you, Mark. How do we encourage people to come away from the screen and come back out in person? And to literally to live, because when you're behind a screen, when you're locked away, you're not really living. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for us, we are in a rural village, so there are only 700 people that live within our community. We are on a main road, and we do service the local parishes. We are just a mile and a half from Andover. So we get a broad mix of people that do come in, whether it's for 2 minutes or because they're passing or targeted, drop off a letter or post a parcel or pay a bill or just to do a little bit of shopping. What we do, what we've always done, is we're completely engaging, friendly, open, welcoming. We take every obstacle away that we can. So we're open till 7 in the evening in the week, at 6 at the weekend, and the post office is all available. We have a social media that's just friendly and a bit of fun, and try and engage with those, sort of people that do follow us online. Put events on, say we've got something going on, come on down and have a look. We've got new products. We support local producers. So if they're profiling a new product, we'll send an invite that way. And then word of mouth within our community to have an open door, really. And it's the best that we can do here.
That's fantastic. So you're an independent. Is this an independent post
yes.
office? Because
yes.
not what post office do in general, is it?
No, post office have their own social media and other ways of approaching people, which I'm sure Mark will explain.
Yes, Mark. Keen to hear.
Sure. So Leslie does an incredible, incredible job in her local community. And I know that postmasters up and down the country do very, very similar things. I've heard recently from postmasters who will anything from going and dropping off a cup of coffee and sitting with customers who used to come to the post office but might not be able to now. They will go and have a chat with them at home. There's all sorts of amazing things that go on right across the country, thanks to our postmasters taking initiative and doing what they know is right for their community. There is no one size fits all. There is nothing that we could put a stamp across the whole country. It all depends on what's happening in that individual community, and that's what our postmasters can do. You asked about what reasons we can give people to go and have those interactions in their local community. One of the campaigns that we're running at the minute is with the Trussell Trust. We're encouraging people to, no matter who they bank with, it could be one of the big high street banks, building society, we support so many different banks. Customers come and withdraw cash at the post office as part of your daily or weekly errands when you're off to do your shopping. Every time a customer does that, we are giving a penny to the Trussell Trust to help with the fantastic work that they do, and we're hoping to raise over £300,000 to support them until the end of March.
Fantastic. So where can people go to get more information then?
So I'd always suggest people go online, postoffice.co.uk. You can find out the wide range of things that we do, surprising things that you might not know you could do at a post office, pay a bill, do your banking, as well as posting letters and parcels. But we know that a lot of people aren't online. So I would always encourage people as well to pop down to their local post office. Just go, find an excuse to go in, buy a chocolate bar, check your bank balance, pay a bill, whatever it is. While you're there, have a conversation with the local postmaster and their team. See what they're up to and see what you can get involved in.
Yeah, and this is why I think for me it's so important, because the post office is also a meeting place. And as you said, Leslie, as well, especially for your community and what you do there, yeah, it's a meeting place. So I think it's also another little call to the government to make sure these places stay open, because they are important. And I think when we start to take those things away, as you said, Leslie, you've got 700 people. So the post office is vital to that community. We start to lose those things. We start to lose another opportunity for people to be able to come together. So that's my push for you two.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's my pleasure. Guys, have an absolutely fantastic afternoon. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
I do apologise for the audio, my audio on that interview there, because I was actually sitting in my car and soft tops don't actually have the best acoustics, can I say. I was on a course in Birmingham. I'd actually lined that interview up and I didn't want to not do it. So I do hope that interview made sense. And it was interesting for me, really, because I don't think of the post office as being... Well, I think of the post office as being partly a community hub. But I suppose, especially when you're living in rural areas and in a smaller communities, it really is an essential part. But many post office, many of those businesses are being taken away. So, you know, let's try and save the post office and use it for more than just, you know, posting letters. And even if we then go and if we withdraw money, if it's going to put it into things like the Trussell Trust and help with loneliness, you know, a penny's a penny, but it all adds up. So
question I want to ask you today is, how much sleep do you get? And are you a person that says, I only need 3 to 4 hours sleep, when really we should be having 7 to 8? We're going to talk about Britain's lack of sleep and its impact on our productivity and relationships and mood. And I'm blessed to be speaking with Dr. Guy Meadows from Sleep School. Dr. Guy, welcome to Her Health and Happiness.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. So, yes, this survey done by Twinings is really, really quite interesting. And I find it amazing that people don't think they need sleep and they don't realise the impact that sleep has had on them. So just before I ask you a couple of questions, their poll found that 19% of people, and I have been guilty of this recently, I have to say, think about rewatching Criminal Minds, which is not good, staying up too late watching TV or films. 17% are stressing over finances, 15% are worrying about work. And that's just a few of the stats they found that's preventing people from getting more rest. What have you found?
Well, I think, you know, what the research highlights to us is that, you know, sadly, you know, almost half of the UK population are not getting enough sleep. You know, then we're not getting that 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And I guess most worrying for me is that, you know, a quarter, so 25%, are getting less, you know, than 5 hours a night. And that's where we know it's going to have a sort of significant impact on their mental, emotional and physical sort of health and performance. So, you know, once again, it shows us that that the UK population are deprived. And if we could just get a little bit more sleep each night, then we'd, you know, we'd really be able to notice that in our morning refreshment levels, in our, you know, sort of our mental performance, how we, you know, our mood, but also in, you know, various elements of our health as well.
So I can say you sound really sprightly, like really full of life. And it's funny because I think, you know, you have that statement that people say, are you a morning person? Are you a night person? And, you know, we've got this cost of living crisis. I understand that. But, you know, the Bible says, right, why worry about tomorrow, what you should eat, what you should wear, what you should do? Sufficient for today is its own trouble. So we sit there worrying about things we can't control, worrying about things that are ahead of us. We don't live in the moment and our mood changes. That has an impact, obviously, on our relationships. But waking up and starting a day, and my sister, if I ring her, say, like, what are you calling me so early for? I'm like, because it's daytime. It's like, you know, that we take that grogginess and that sort of depressed mood, we take it into our day, don't we?
Yeah, and I think you've touched on a really good point, which, you know, is definitely worth recognizing that, you know, we know that our genetics influences the timing of our sleep. So we have morning people, so who like to go to bed earlier and get up earlier. We've got daytime people who, you know, sort of, you know, fit that typical, you know, will go to bed about between 10 and 11, get up at between 6 and 7. And then we have evening types who like to go to bed, say, past midnight, for example, and sleep in till, you know, sort of eight or nine. And it is about, we know that, you know, it's not just about getting the right amount of sleep, or getting the right amount of sleep on a regular basis. And actually, this Twining research showed that 36% of people, only 36% of people, go to bed and get up at the same time each day. So, you know, three quarters of us are keeping very irregular sleep. But what we also know is that we want to be, if we can, sleeping at the time which is feels most natural to us. So for the, you know, the early people, they go to bed early and get up early. For the later people, they go to bed later and get up later. And generally, then we will feel better. We will have more energy. We'll have better mood, etc.
So what about circadian rhythms? Because I know I do a lot of work with circadian rhythms. What about circadian health?
Circadian health is everything. You know, sort of our for those who don't know, our internal body clock is 20,000 clock cells located sort of in an area of our brain called our suprachiasmatic nucleus. And it is responsible for keeping every biological process that we have on time. So our appetite hormones, you know, sort of our blood pressure, our heart rate, you know, and but also when we sleep and wake. And the interesting thing about the body clock is it creates this 24-hour circadian rhythm. But it itself is kept on time by our behaviors. And I think that's what, you know, Twinings, you know, are trying to sort of help people understand is that, you know, simple things like keeping a regular sleep-wake cycle, having a regular wind-down routine, waking up at the same time, all of these things help to keep your body clock on time and therefore keep all of those biological processes on time. So everything works better. We're healthier, happier, more productive.
Mm. And I think the thing that people don't realize, because I say to a lot of my clients and stuff, one of the fastest ways to get sick is to lack sleep. But also when you've got so many of these, everyone wants to be youthful all the time, right? So I just turned 60 last November and I call it sassy, sexy 60. But everybody wants to be youthful. They want to look young. But a lack of sleep it actually helps to accelerate aging, doesn't it?
Yeah, we know that sleep is the single most powerful health providing behavior there is. And, you know, I could rattle off, you know, everything.
Hold on, stop one second. You have to say that statement again because people need to understand that statement clearly.
That it's sleep is the single most powerful health providing behavior.
That's the one.
If we look at, you know, we've obviously got that term beauty sleep. We know that sleep plays a really important role in the release of hormones such as growth hormone, but also, you know, cellular repair. So, you know, the nighttime is the time where your body is repairing, is restoring, you know, all of the damage that we do during the day. And so that's why we need to prioritize it. But it doesn't just stop there. You know, it helps us to manage our appetite hormones. So, you know, which is obviously good for helping us to keep a healthy weight. It even helps to wash our brain of toxins during the night.
Yes.
So it's absolutely wonderful stuff.
Yeah, it's when we lay down memories, you know, and it's the memories that we lay down. So I always say to people, it's when the body has an opportunity to rebuild, refresh, restore. Yeah. And repair. And that is done in rest. It's done in sleep. It's not done when you're running around, jumping around and doing the things you're doing. So why is it, do you think that, because I think actually, like I said, you know, being of an age as I am, we used to have, you know, two or three channels. And at 10 o'clock at night, you had the little girl in the square. You ever see that picture, you know, the teddy bear.
Yeah,
that was
yeah.
It. TV's finished, right? So, you know, you went to bed because there was nothing else to do. But now we've got 24-hour entertainment. And what I keep saying to my friends is, remember, you are watching people who have done the work, who are in bed sleeping. You are watching them when they've done their work. They've done the work. They're not doing it in real time. So they're in bed sleeping and you are staying up, awake, watching programs all the time. And this whole, you know, next episode thing, which is very dangerous, because I remember when I got my TV, we changed the TV when it finally broke about 4 or 5 years ago, and I say to my friends before, I don't understand how anyone can sit there and just binge watch anything. That's got to be, and I understand it now.
Yeah.
you have to make a conscious decision, don't you?
You absolutely do. And it is about bringing back a little bit of self-control, which is really challenging when, you know, you have such, you know, sort of attractive digital technology. And I think this Twinings research really points that, you know, with, you know, you've already said that, you know, 20% of us are staying up late watching TV. But, you know, when it comes to waking up in the night, you know, 41% turn to our screens or 20% jump straight into emails. And so we just have to be really careful with our our digital devices, not only because of the bright light which they emit, which tricks our brain into thinking it needs to be awake when it actually should be sleeping, thus it, you know, by inhibiting melatonin, the sleeping hormone, and activating cortisol, the waking hormone, but also the content. You know, the content of these digital devices is obviously, you know, it's pretty good. You know, it makes our brain, you know, it we want to watch more, and we certainly know that, you know, we also just love to scroll. It activates reward hormones such as dopamine, which kind of we get a little buzz from it. So it is quite addictive. So it is best to, you know, as a key part, key message from Twinings is about having a regular routine in the evening. You know, and that can be as simple as having a go to bed alarm just to say, okay, it's time to start, you know, putting into practice my simple wind down routine, having a herbal tea, drinking reading a calming book, doing some gentle stretches, you know, some prayer, whether it be, you know, some gratitude practice, you know, sort of all of these things help to activate what's called our parasympathetic nervous system, which it helps to elicit the relaxation response, which is just nudging gently the your body and your brain towards sleep.
Yeah, and I think people need to understand that, because I mean, I'm a person that does not believe in TVs in the bedroom. So, you know, from when I had my oldest son 29 years ago this year, there's no TVs in the bedroom. So I'm not disrupted by that. I don't, you know, I keep my phone in my room, but only if I wake up in the night, just maybe, and I don't always wake up in the night. Sometimes I may wake up to go and use the bathroom, but then I may just tap it just to see what the time is. That's about it. But apart from that, I couldn't think of anything worse than waking up in the middle of the night and scrolling. But I think what we don't recognize, and a lot of people don't recognize, is that living on cortisol for so long is really detrimental to our health as well. That's one of the things that destroys us. And, you know, it is our wake-up hormone, and melatonin is the one that wants to be released to allow us to relax, to repair, to refresh, to rebuild and restore. And we're not recognizing that. So sometimes we're using products to anti-age, then we're using sleep against ourselves to age ourselves. We're trying to live a life that's more healthy, but we're living on cortisol and we're just overworking the adrenals. So we're trying to do something good in one hand, but just our actions and lack of sleep is destroying it in the other hand. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think you've put that really well. I think, and you know, what I really hope that comes from this Twining Sleep Census research is that, is if anything, people choose to prioritize sleep in their life a little bit more, just to recognize that actually this is something that's completely free and it's the most powerful, you know, health providing behavior that I can do. So whether it is that you want to eat healthier, whether that's you want to be fitter or stronger, whether that's you want to have better mood or manage, you know, sort of perhaps mental health issues, you know, or just, you know, sort of look a bit younger, have a few less wrinkles, you know, sleep can help.
Yeah, definitely. And I always say, I said to my friends that, you know, really there are six, well, I call it seven, principles of total health. So you've got thoughts, breath, hydration, sleep. It's really that order. It's thoughts first, breath second, then hydration and sleep. Then it's food and movement and social interaction, which really came in, became more apparent through lockdown. But most people, when they want to get healthy, they skip the first four. They don't even think their thoughts have anything to do with what's happening. They don't think about breath. They don't think about hydration. And they certainly don't, in this modern 24-hour living, think about sleep. And so we always just think, right, I'm going to eat better. I'm going to do more exercise. We just choose exercises that raise the cortisol levels even higher. We don't really know and understand the food and the food qualities. So that's quite a minefield in itself. But actually, if you don't really think about hydration and breath and sleep and thoughts, then you're never going to optimize your health anyway, are you?
Exactly. I think one thing that is really important for people to gauge, because anyone who's listened to this might feel, you know, they might feel it's too overwhelming. What do I do? And the most important thing and the advice that we always give is that, you know, just do something small, you know, just make one small change, whether it's you start darkening down. You know, whenever you start having a routine, you know, evening routine, maybe you start staying in bed, you know, and resting rather than sort of, you know, checking your mail, etc. Just do one little thing and put that into place. And that can begin, if you repeat it, that can begin to have a big impact on your sleep. But if people want to find out more about the advice that we're recommending, they can just go to twinings.co.uk/sleep census and they can find lots of helpful advice. But it sounds like you're already giving your listeners lots of fantastic advice as well.
No, I do. But I mean, you get that this interview has been really, really powerful. Thank you so much for it. I really enjoy it. And I mean, the thing is, I tell people, like, if someone goes to bed at 1, I don't expect them tomorrow to go to bed at 10. It's not going to work. But I always say to them, you know, start by going to bed at 1:45. Sorry, 1 second. Oh, no. So sorry. I can cut that piece out. Sorry. Okay. You can start by going to bed at 1:45 instead of going to bed at 1. Do that for a couple of weeks and then go back by 15 minutes. And over time, that time will, they will get to where they need to be. Does that make sense? Right. Because it's not going to jump. Like you said, they can lay down earlier and rest, or they can say to themselves, right, I'm going to lay down. So if they're laying down earlier and just resting, then if they're going to bed at 1, they may lay down from 20:01 and just rest for 20 minutes and then see how they get on.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dr. Guy, I know I'm running out of time because I can see somebody telling me, shut up. And I'm joking. Dr. Guy, it's been a pleasure. Are you on, can people find you on social media?
Yes. I was just a little bit confused there. But yeah, so just go to search Dr. Guy and you'll be able to find me. But also, you know, check out thetwinings.co.uk/sleepcensors if people are looking for more information as well.
All right, Dr. Guy, have a blessed day. Thank you so much for your time.
You too. Take care.
Thank you.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks. Dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Are you aware that it is Cancer Prevention Action Week this week, 20th to the 26th of February? And also, are you aware that almost 6 in 10 Brits are unaware that processed meat could increase their risk of bowel cancer? So today, I'm blessed to be speaking with Dr. Helen Croker, Head of Research Interpretation at World Cancer Research Fund, and Matthew Lambert, Health Information and Promotion Manager, also from World Cancer Research Fund. And we are going to try and encourage Brits to swap out the bacon in their sarnie. So, Dr. Helen and Matthew, welcome to Her Health and Happiness.
Hi.
Good morning.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have both of you. So let me start with you first. As a non-pork eater anyway, and I don't eat processed meats, so this is quite a good conversation for me. Dr. Helen, what is it your research has found then?
So, as I say, you've mentioned that we're launching this great initiative today, Cancer Prevention Action Week. And at World Cancer Research Fund, we've been looking at the global research on the causes of all different types of cancer for over 20 years. But this cancer particularly focuses on bowel cancer. And the reason for this is that we know that over half of the cases of bowel cancer could be prevented. And we also know from our research and research of others that there's strong evidence of a link between processed meat and bowel cancer. So really, that's why we're asking people to engage with this campaign and to consider eating less processed meat and to take part in the campaign by swapping out the processed meat from their sandwich fillings for healthier options. And if they go to our website, they can find lots of ideas on how to do this. So Cancer Prevention Action Week, if you search for that online.
Fantastic. And so, Matthew, what made you instigate the research in the first place?
Well, I think over the last 3 decades, World Cancer Research Fund has very much led the way when it comes to the global evidence as it pertains to. At World Cancer Research Fund, we champion the latest global scientific evidence as it relates to diet and lifestyle and cancer prevention. One of the links of our diet that links to cancer, and specifically bowel cancer, is processed meat. And over the last three decades, it's been a very much consistent, strong finding. So whilst people may be aware of various like mixed messages when it comes to diet and lifestyle and cancer, we champion the latest global evidence. So our blueprint for cancer prevention, our cancer prevention recommendations, are the strongest scientific evidence that people can follow to help reduce risk of cancer, and specifically bowel cancer. And what we're doing as part of Cancer Prevention Action Week is highlighting the link between processed meat and bowel cancer. And limiting or reducing how much processed meat you consume is one of our cancer prevention recommendations. So when people see or follow our cancer prevention recommendations, they can be sure that they are following the strongest scientific evidence there is globally as it relates to diet, lifestyle and cancer prevention.
Fantastic. I think, I mean, for a lot of people, that, you know, especially if you're going into town and you know, if you're going to the supermarkets, if you're going to a lot of the sandwich stores, there's lots of sandwiches with bacon in them. So again, so Dr. Helen, how are you going to be able to, because you can get people to do that at home, it's easy to do. So how do we encourage the supermarkets? How do we encourage shops like Pret or other sandwich shops that are available? How do we encourage those shops that have these, you know, like this, the Jake chicken BLT something or whatever it's called or whatever. How do we encourage them to make a sandwich? I mean, I know some of them are making different sandwiches now, but how do we encourage them to take those out of there?
Yeah, I mean, you're quite right. There's a lot of processed meat available to us. And of course, our food choices are heavily influenced by, you know, what's around us, what's easily accessible. However, I think now there's a lot more popularity of plant-based foods. So it's actually quite easy to find options which do not have meat or processed meat in them. And I think a lot of that is being led by consumer demand. So people want those foods, so therefore the food retailers do provide them. However, there is also an argument, you know, for pressuring, you know, for policies that put pressure on food providers to actually move more towards healthier options. But this particular campaign, we're focusing on trying to help people, support people by providing them information to empower them to make their own choices, whether that be in the house or out of the house. So really the ideas that we've gotten, the suggestions, will help them to do that should they choose.
Yeah, I mean, that's really important. I suppose the worry is, you know, if you're a farmer, for instance, and, you know, you're pig farming and you sell a lot of processed meats, then the worry and the fear is, what's it going to do to your pocket? But then we've got to be able to get to a point where we've got to balance out the health of the people and the finance of the individual or the company. Does that make sense?
No, I mean, absolutely. There's always a very fine balance to be had. And I think with this particular campaign, what we're doing is encouraging people to specifically reduce the amount of processed meat they consume. We do have a recommendation to have moderate portions of red meat. So we're not saying to cut out meat from the diet completely, because, of course, we know that there's many you know, really nutrients that you can get from meat. So it's about moderate portions of red meat, but actually limiting the processed meat specifically.
Yeah, because I just seasoned up a lovely half leg of lamb yesterday.
Nice.
That's definitely staying in my diet. So Matthew, where can people go to get more information then?
Yeah, so people, if they just search for Cancer Prevention Action Week, and that'll take you through to our website. And it will come up with loads of different recipes, ways to tips to reduce the processed meat consumption. We've got a fact sheet that's all about processed meat, as I said, to give people tips on how to cut down, helping people to educate people about what processed meat is and how to know if meat is actually processed. We've got a fun little quiz that people can take part in to get an idea as to public's awareness of processed meat. And we've got lots of great sandwich swaps ideas on there as well. And that's what we really want as part of Cancer Prevention Action Week, is for people to take part in a great British Sarnie swap. And it's very much all about swapping out maybe one of their processed meat containing sandwiches for a healthy alternative. And we've got, less to say, we've got lots of ideas on our website.
And so the website, if only one more time.
So people just search online for Cancer Prevention Action Week, and that will take you through to our World Cancer Research Fund website. And that's where people will be able to access all the information about Cancer Prevention Action Week, which is running this whole week up until the 26th of February.
Excellent. And just before you both go, so I'm going to ask you first, since I'm speaking to you first, Matthew.
Yeah.
What is your favourite sarnie then?
Well, I must admit, I am, like most of the nation, a big sandwich eater. I think on average, I think people eat about 3 sandwiches a week within the UK. And I think something like we eat about 3 billion sandwiches a year, which is amazing. So for me personally, I must admit, I do love fish. So things like tinned salmon, tinned tuna, probably my favourites. But yeah, I eat sandwich most days. But yeah, I'd probably say tuna, some black pepper, some seasoning, some lemon juice, some red pepper. Chopped tomato, just add a bit of extra flavour to it. That's my favourite in the week.
You better post that picture then. Absolutely. It looks like.
Absolutely.
Okay, and Dr. Helen, what's your favourite sandwich?
I really like eggs and a boiled egg just sliced up with a little bit of pepper. Perfect. That will do me.
Fantastic. I'm not a sandwich eater hardly at all, but if I'm going to have some kind of sandwich, it's going to be, last week, there's a Jewish bagel, well, not anywhere near me, actually, but I go across to East London to a Jewish bagels, you know, the unleavened bagels, and they made love heart-shaped bagels for Valentine's, and it looks so pretty, and I toasted it, and then for me, the only filling has to be avocado, which if it was a man, I'd marry it. How sad am I? with some salt, black pepper, and cayenne pepper. And then I just sliced it and put it on the top, put the topping on, and then just took pictures of it and sent it to all my friends.
I was going to say, you got to do hashtag CPAW and at us on our social media.
All right, I will do. I'll
send it.
I'll
share that.
Hashtag, say the hashtag again.
Hashtag CPAW.
Okay, excellent. I will do that, definitely. All right. Dr. Helen and Matthew, thank you so much.
Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Another show, another week complete. So I think you got a great plethora of information there. There are still many people out there who feel lonely, who don't know where to turn or feel fear. I just want to encourage you that there's nothing to fear, but everything to live for. We are fearfully and wonderfully made. We were born with this immune system. We just need to understand the environment and the nutrition and lifestyle factors that play a part in strengthening our immune system. And just to know that fear and the anxiety it creates and the stress that it brings into the body can actually be a destroyer of the very system you need to protect you. So come out and live. Come out and live, because life is for living. You're given one life, live it purposefully and live it to its max, because that's what we're there for. Now, I am running my 60-day challenge. By the time I come on next week, the 60-day challenge is there. Check me out on Instagram at Pelvic Secrets, Twitter at Pelvic Secrets, although I'm not very active on Twitter, but Instagram definitely, LinkedIn. If you're thinking about your posture and wanting to improve your posture, I am your girl. I'm all things posture, because it is a position from where all movement begins and ends. So if you want to improve your flexibility, if you want to decrease the risk of pain, injury or discomfort, if you don't want to struggle with leaking bladders, because that is my forte to stop you from leaking, and you want to enjoy life really well, then come and join in. Be a part of the movement. Sassy, sexy, 60. PelvicSecrets@iCloud.com, or find me Jenny Russell on LinkedIn and on Facebook. I've got The Power Within the Pelvis and Pelvic Floor Secret. It's just to say, I was interviewed as well on Facebook. I'm going to share that interview as well on YouTube, my YouTube channel, Pelvic Floor Secrets, because if somebody gave you £1 million tomorrow and said, build the most amazing, extravagant complex or house, whatever, the first thing you would do is to build the foundation, something you do not see. As I've always said, and it's in my spoken word, my pelvic floor, something you cannot see, may either reward or debilitate me. or the other pelvic floor spoken word starts with, hidden from view, not a thought or regard. The pelvic floor, your internal bodyguard. Put under pressure all day and all night to avoid even embarrassment. The sphincters must stay shut tight. No matter what we do, the foundation we build things on dictates whether or not the things we build will last and last well. So, if you want more information, 0207-291-4499. Find me on all the social media platforms. But until next week, in health and happiness, stay blessed, stay relevant, stay well.